The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Watch this.
Brandon Tatum is a 7-year veteran of the Tucson Police Department. He's a YouTube sensation with 1.9 million subscribers. He started Blexit with Candace Owens, and now he's tackling his biggest assignment yet. This is the Officer Tatum Show.
We got a lot to talk about, a whole lot to talk about. And one of the things that we need to address, and I think it's important and critical, is what's going on in Uvalde. I want to let it go. I told myself I would let it go. But I just want us to be informed, and that's and nothing else. If we are informed, I'm happy. I do not want people to be misled by false information. And there's a lot of developing things in Uvalde. There's a lot of concerns. There's a lot of question marks. And I think that everybody that's listening to this, if you care about the subject matter, you should have questions. You should be seeking solutions or answers to those questions. My preaching to you is that don't be so willing to indict without all the information. Remember when Breonna Taylor was just sleeping in her bed and then we come to find out that wasn't true. Remember when Michael Brown had his hands up, don't shoot. The media reported it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Come find out it wasn't true. Even the DOJ went, the DOJ, y'all know the DOJ is investigating in Uvalde. The DOJ went to the funeral of Michael Brown. And after a lengthy investigation, they determined that the officer was completely cleared and did nothing wrong. So all I'm saying is that we should be mindful of these things. Do I personally believe that things may have been done inappropriately in Uvalde? I think that there could be a possibility of that. You know, there's a lot of question marks there, and I don't think it was done in malice. I think that maybe incompetence, or, I mean, that's if I'm even correct. I really don't know what happened, but there could have been, given us the fact that it was a small town and the police chief was a chief of 6 officers, there could have been miscommunication. I'm sure it was chaotic. There could have been a faulty communication of how many kids are in the classroom, all of the above. That could have been a reason why it was so tragic. I'm not giving anybody an excuse because nobody's paying me to be nice to them and make excuses for them. But I want us to think these things through. Breaking information has come out. I think people say it's breaking. I don't think it's breaking at all. Information has come out and said that the Uvalde police chief is no longer cooperating with authorities. Now, everybody else can believe exactly what the mainstream media says, but I'm going to tell you what the truth is. I don't know about the communication, but I do know is that the media is reporting this. However, in any article that I've read, every single article that I've read, the official statement from Highway Patrol, which is DPS, is that the Uvalde police chief and the Uvalde police department are cooperating 100%. The media is speculating because the Uvalde police chief haven't communicated with this investigation or the investigators in 2 days. Now, he could totally be saying, I don't want nothing to do with it. I'm not going to cooperate. But when you ask yourself the question, where are they getting this information from? Highway Patrol came out and said that they've been cooperative in this entire situation, that the police chief from Uvalde haven't responded to a requested follow-up interview in 2 days. Now, you got to think the report came out yesterday. So what happened the day before yesterday? If my memory serves me correctly, it's Memorial Day. What happened the 2 days before that? It's the weekend. And then also there's a lot of people putting their children to rest in Uvalde. Maybe, just maybe, the police chief isn't worried about some investigation where they already threw him under the bus. He's worried about the people that he serves in his community and putting these kids to rest. Now, that could totally be wrong. He could be a dirtbag. But for the people who are listening, I want you to be informed and process these things in your mind before you jump off a cliff. And I'm just going to do a quick recap. And the reason why I think it's important to process things before you jump completely off a cliff. One of the things is that the story has changed tremendously from when the reports first came out. I remember the reports came out and they said it was only 4 dead and like 14 injured. Then 24 hours later, there's 21 dead. Is someone lying? Highly unlikely. It's that they need to identify kids. They need to contact their parents, get a roll call, and figure out if these kids are in fact dead or those kids weren't at the school. They have to designate who exactly is amongst the deceased. Initially, one of the teachers left the door propped open. Now we know that she didn't leave the door propped open. It appears that she kicked the rock from out under the door. The door did not shut or lock like it was supposed to. Does that mean that the Uvalde police chief and investigators are lying? No, that just means during an investigation, when you have other camera angles, when you have witness statements, you may have amateur video from witnesses. When you put it all together, it unfolds over time, meaning that the original information they got probably was bad information from witnesses. Let me go back to Michael Brown. The witnesses said that Michael Brown had his hands up and they executed him in the middle of the street. The witnesses got on television and did interviews saying that his hands was up, don't shoot. And they completely lied. Is that the police fault? No, they're listening to witnesses who are claiming to be at the scene of the incident and they're having to diagnose that information and then disseminate it to the public. Now, when you rush within 24 hours to give information on a complex situation like Uvalde, there's going to be some things that change over time. People who understand the process and the people who are listening to me now understand that things are going to change over time because this is a preliminary investigation. And if you don't give the people some information, they're going to think you're hiding something. So they tried to get it out as fast as possible, but things are beginning to develop. So if you look at the Uvalde case from the very beginning, and you see that it has evolved over time, I think it's fair to say that it can still be evolving. So people are saying that the cops, you know, sat there and did nothing for 40 minutes. I mean, now it's reports coming out that they were rescuing kids in the meantime. They weren't just sitting there. They were rescuing kids in the meantime. There's an article I just read that said the police chief didn't think there was any kids in the classroom that were being executed. Right or wrong, true or false, that's a possibility that may come out. I got some other insider information. I can't disclose exactly everything because I don't want to interfere in an investigation. I don't want to be a part of an investigation. But there are different things that I never heard before that have come out through individuals who are potentially a part of the investigation. And the door mechanism, that's the biggest thing that I think that's becomes problematic and most people don't understand. You know, how did he get into the school? How did the suspect get into the classrooms? Apparently, some information that I've gotten is that that classroom that he went in first was actually his home room when he went to Robb Elementary. I cannot confirm or deny that, but that's the information that I'm getting. And then also the door had a mechanism issue, meaning that even though the teachers may intended to shut and lock it, it malfunctioned and there could be issues with the door that was not addressed. And so you have, you know, the suspect coming in and everybody's doing what they believe is right, but doors are malfunctioning and the suspect is now involved in a tremendous amount of shooting and death occurred. One thing that they're not telling you, and I know this has happened, is that there are people who survived that was in those rooms. Some of the young people who called 911, at least two confirmed 911 callers, were rescued. There were multiple people in the room that the suspect was barricaded in. To me, it was still an active shooter situation. The suspect was barricaded in, lived, survived, were rescued. And it's sad that the media hasn't even mentioned that one time. I can't find an article that will indicate how many kids were actually rescued from the school. You know, multiple kids, video evidence and footage are showing that multiple kids are jumping out of classroom windows all over the school. The only contained area was two classrooms out of the entire school where the suspect was at. And so there's a lot more information that's going to come out. And I don't care what everybody else do, but the people that listen to my show, I just want you to take a step back and let some information come out and make an informed criticism. At the end of this, we all may say the Uvalde police chief is a complete idiot and he cost the lives of 21 people. Or at the end of this, we may be, you know, the situation may comes out that, hey, he may come out that, hey, he may have done all that he could with the information he had. He had bad information. You know, be open-minded to those two possibilities and allow evidence to dictate what you are saying and not allow emotion to dictate. We are not like the left. I don't care how crazy situations sound. I don't care how emotional you get. Do not allow emotions to dictate your response. Jussie Smollett said that two white dudes beat him up with MAGA hats on. 90% of people that live in Chicago understand that it's no way in the world that that sounds rational. Information comes out, it was a complete lie, and he paid people to lie on him or to beat him up and to lie and say that he was involved in a racist interaction with two white dudes. I got a couple of people calling in. The number is 844-900-7243, 844-900-7243. Call into the show. I'll be able to catch you in the next segment. I'm running out of time here. But if you're going to call in. Try to make it brief so we can get everybody involved. You're listening to the Officer Tatum Show. I'll catch you after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, yours truly in MyPillow are offering a buy one, get one extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Now's the time to join millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. Right now, buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows. Just go to the radio listener specials page at MyPillow.com and use promo code Tatum or call 800-976-8379. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to buy one, get one free on select items. You will also receive Mike's book absolutely free with any purchase. Call 1-800-858-0263 or go to the Radio Listener Specials page at MyPillow.com. Use promo code Tatum.
Officer Tatum Show, 844-900-7243. That's 844-900-7243.
Ladies and gentlemen, back to the Uvalde situation. I have a caller that's calling in. I want him to chime in on this. And before I get back into what I was speaking about, David from San Antonio, welcome to the Officer Tatum Show.
Yes, sir. I'm a Marine vet, and the problem we have in any shooting or any situation is the police officers got the press ragging on them and nagging them for what happened. Now, in the military, when we have a situation develop, what we say is, please hold, I'm developing a situation, which means basically I'm trying to see what's going on. When I have the facts, I'll be able to get back with you and tell you what's going on. Please be patient and wait. I mean, what is the press going to do to them? We got pressure of superior officers or NCOs on the radio distracting us. And you have to remain calm and tell them, okay, just relax. I don't know what's going on, but I will let you know what's going on. And when they say, well, we have video, we have witnesses. Yes, but you have them in context. And you have to control the interview and not let the press control you. And it may sound hard, but that's the only way to stop innuendos, rumors, and fabrication, sir, in my opinion.
David, thank you so much for the call, and thank you for saying that. I know people probably think I'm just talking, like other people are smart like I am to understand that you have to wait. I was a PIO, so for people that don't know, it's a spokesperson, public information officer, a.k.a. spokesperson for the police department, and we would talk about this all the time. We go to give our briefing, and we give a very minimal amount of information to the public, and we tell them this is an ongoing investigation. There is more information, but we want to make sure we get you clear, concise information. Therefore, there is no ambiguity. Some things are going to be under investigation. We wish we could get it to you, but we will not be able to. Here's the facts and circumstances. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you when we have more information. That's exactly what we should be doing in this situation. And I think that this situation was dictated by the media. And this is where the failure occurred. Even when the DPS spokesperson came out more recently, I mean, he got flustered. The people were pressuring him to make a statement about the investigation that he's claiming that's underway. He made the mistake of saying, and this should be taught in schools all around the country for PIOs and public information officers on departments, is he made the mistake of saying and talking out of both sides of his mouth, saying this is an under investigation. I'm not here to judge. I'm not here to make a judgment. I'm here to give the information to the family, and the investigation will dictate right whether someone was right or wrong. Then once the pressure was on, he says, in hindsight, I could say with the information we have now that they were completely wrong. Well, sir, you better hope they were wrong, because if your investigation leads you to a different conclusion, then you are going to look like an idiot. And you are supposed to be impartial. If you know that they're wrong right now, what does the public think? That y'all just playing around in a fake investigation that may take 6 months? You better tell the people, I don't know. I will not make a judgment. I have my own personal beliefs, but I will not make a judgment. I'm not here to talk about what I personally believe. And he should have left it at that, but you could see the pressure was mounting. He got flustered, and he said something off color that I think the media instantaneously moved on. Every single website that I have looked at from that point on said police lead, police officer or commander, head of an investigation admits that the person was wrong. When in the statement he actually made was that in hindsight, I can see that what they did appeared to be wrong. However, I wasn't there. But, you know, the media will never go for that. And that's not their objective, is to put out the truth. In my opinion, their objective is to get clicks and likes and get people, get advertisers to buy space on their platforms. One of the craziest situations, and I think people may not know this about the grandmother, is that when she got shot in her face, she actually came out of the house and went and called the police. And so the neighbors saw the shooter jump in her truck, and he obviously didn't know how to drive. He couldn't even get the truck started up, and he peels off, and they see grandmother come out of the house covered in blood, and she was still able to communicate with them to call the police. And according to information that I have, information that's publicly available to everybody else, is that she's in stable condition. But just imagine the chaotic scene. I think people may not understand this, and I'm going to be very brief because I don't want to talk about Uvalde for the rest of my life on this show. But if anybody knows anything about policing, shootings are one of the most chaotic calls and response from police officers that you can probably be involved in, which would necessitate multiple officers. So if you put this together, they had a shooting at the shooter's grandmother's house, which she's expressing that she has gotten shot in the face. Then they have a car crash in front of a school and a shooting at the funeral home. And these two calls are probably taking majority of the attention and resources from the officers that are on duty, because they have to deal with a shooting of a grandmother who's gotten shot in her face. They have no idea instantaneously that these are all connected, and probably until maybe it could have been 30 minutes or so after probably it happened that they could get the information that they were connected. You have grandmother, you have a funeral home shooting, and then you have a school shooting. And so that can really deplete resources, and people couldn't just not follow up with grandma. So multiple officers had to respond to grandma. EMT had to respond to EMS, had to respond to grandma. She was airlifted from that location to get surgery. And I believe he probably blew her jaw off, especially if he shot her with the AR-15. There's a lot of questions as to what laws that were in place that could have prevented this situation from happening. And there are a few laws. He threatened people online. He made threats of rape to young women on Yubo. I think it's a little website called Yubo. They call it the Tinder for little kids. I guess I say little kids, teenagers. He made threats against women on there. He's posting pictures of a bag of dead cats, talking about killing cats. He had mentioned to other people, allegedly, that he wanted to join the Marine Corps so he can kill people. All of those threats that were made online are illegal. His behavior was worthy enough to be petitioned for a medical treatment or a medical review in the state of Texas. There's more. Hold the phone. You're listening to the Officer Tatum Show. I'll catch you guys after the break.
The Officer Tatum Show. 844-900-7243. That's 844-900-7243.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Brandon Tatum. You can follow me on all my social media platforms at The Officer Tatum. Everywhere you're at, I'm with you. My next guest is completely awesome. I had an incredible experience with one of his articles of work, and it helped me destroy these black liberals in a debate. He's a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, the author of the book BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution. My next guest has written about critical race theory, identity politics, diversity, multiculturalism, assimilation, nationalism. 100% right up the alley that I want to talk about. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome my next guest, Mike Gonzalez.
Brandon, you give me a great honor by introducing me in that manner and by having me come here to talk to you about an issue that I think is very important to the two of us.
Well, Mike, I want to start out by just talking about Black Lives Matter. You know, we've heard of the controversy of Patrice Cullors and the spending of Black Lives Matter. And that, to me, is the smoke in the fire. I mean, that is the fire, the blaze in the fire. But the smoke, which is what kills most people in these fire situations, according to my father, who was a firefighter, the smoke inhalation. It's what kills people. So I want you to dive into, for the audience, the smoke inhalation effect of the residual effect of what Black Lives Matter has done, not just necessarily the financial issues.
Yeah, I'm very happy you put it that way, because what I always say is that, apparently there's grift involved. They have bought these mansions in Toronto and Southern California, in other places. But to me, there will always be grifters. This is actually a feature, not a bug, of communism. Brezhnev and Andropov all had their hunting villas called dachas in the Russian countryside. Fidel Castro died a billionaire. To me, much more important than this is the ideology of the Black Lives Matter organizations. And allow me here, Brandon, to make a difference. I don't talk about the concept. I embrace the concept. Black Lives Matter, to me, it's important to assert that Black Lives Matter. I believe that. You may disagree with me, but I believe that it's important to assert it because of history that we don't even need to explain. The organizations and their founders, though, is what mattered to me, because the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation were founded by committed, I would say, fanatical Marxists whose project is central planning, who really just use social justice as a fig leaf, and who are having a huge impact on our lives today. No, they have not gone away. They're working hand in hand with the Biden administration.
And you, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Mike Gonzalez, a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, wrote the book BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution. You know, BLM... And I want you to explain to my audience this, because I know a lot of conservative people, and that's probably most of the people that listen to me, they don't understand the effects of Marxism. It's a term that's thrown around by conservatives a lot. But what are the effects of actual Marxist theology, and how is that a detriment, in your opinion, to America and especially to Black America?
So they take away your property. They take away everything you have worked all your life to build. All of a sudden, this belongs to the state, that is the government. They take away your right to choose where to work. They take away your freedom of expression, but especially your freedom of expression. But they take away your smile as well. They take away your soul. People have to flee communist countries. They do, and this is something that happens over and over and over and over. This is not something that just happens in one place. Communism has had this impact in every society. We have had experiments in Asia with North Korea and China. We have had experiments in Europe with East Germany and Hungary and Czechoslovakia. We have had experiments here in the Western Hemisphere with Cuba and Venezuela. We have had experiments in Africa. It's always ended in the way I have just described.
And Mike, I want to make something real clear. I agree with you 1,000% on the sentiment of Black Lives Mattering, because I do believe that. You know, my whole family is Black. You know, I've been Black my whole life, and I really do think that a lot of people get individuals like you and I confused, because we believe that Black Lives Matter 100%. I would wear a T-shirt that say Black Lives Matter if it hadn't been taken over by these crazy deranged Marxists who steal the dreams of Black people with the grifting mentality. But I want to jump into a few other things, because in 2020, according to the article that I read that you wrote, in 2020, we saw the biggest jump of homicides or murders in the United States of America at 30%, and 54% of those murders were Black people. So can you explain to the people that are listening what were the ramifications of violence perpetuated by Black Lives Matter? We could start from 2014 all the way down to today.
You know, Brandon, I used to say, do you want to be called Officer Tatum? I
don't. Whichever one is good with me.
Yeah, either way, I used to say that 54% figure. And then a guy in Kansas who has crunched the numbers reached out to me, and he said, you should take a look at these numbers for 2020 and 2021. Because it's a real carnage that's taking place in the Black community. 54, you say 54% because that's the average. Blacks turn to be just over 50% of victims of homicide year in and year out. But for the last 18 months, in places like St. Louis and Milwaukee, the homicide victims have been like 80% Black, 70% Black. So, and this is, I would say, this huge spike in homicides has to be put at the door of something called the Ferguson effect. The Ferguson effect is something that has been documented, that homicides and crime rise in places where Black Lives Matter have had demonstrations and riots and protests between 2014 and 2019. That's something that it was and added, I think, 6,000 extra people murdered in those years, in that space of time, in places where Black Lives Matter protested and rioted. And then, and that's 14, Ferguson. This is when Black Lives Matter really adds political muscle. It's created in 13, but it's in Ferguson after the killing of Michael Brown that Black Lives Matter really gains its political muscle. We can go into it if you like. Then we have 2020, 2021, with this humongous, tragic spike, which 2020 was the highest ever. The second highest spike was 1968, another politically charged year. This, the highest spike by far. Well, the 68 is 12%. 2020 is 30%. The media, which lies congenitally about Black Lives Matter, says this has to do with COVID. It's baffling that they would say this, because there was COVID all over the planet and the murder rate went down in other countries. Here it spiked 30%, and then it spiked again, not 30%, but it added to that figure in 2021. That is a tale of death. A lot of it, Black Americans.
And ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Mike Gonzalez. He's a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, wrote the book BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution. And we're talking about Black Lives Matter and the negative effects that the media do not care to address. You know, when I was talking to the individuals on the debate / conversation, and I got about 2 minutes left. But when I was talking to the individuals there, they refused to acknowledge black on black violence and accountability. They pressed me in saying that the biggest issue in the black community and what our country should be focusing on and Black Lives Matter should be focusing on is the white supremacy that's going on in the inner city and the police murders of black Americans. And I know you have a comment on that, and how relevant is white supremacy and police killings in comparison to the damage. I got about a minute, so I'll let you jump in and then we can follow it over in the next segment.
You know, I don't believe we have systemic racism. We used to have systemic racism prior to 1964. I don't think there is white supremacy in America. Let's first of all what they when they talk about white supremacy, when the practitioners of critical race theory, like Robin DiAngelo and so forth, they are very clear that what they mean by white supremacy is culture, is American culture. They say it's too reductive to talk about white supremacy just in terms of the ugly people who actually believe that whites are supreme. There are people like that. You and I both know it. They're ugly racists. But that's not what they mean by white supremacy. They mean all of culture, all of civilization. And they say
Mike, I want you to stay after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Mike Gonzalez. We're talking about Black Lives Matter. Hold the phone. You're listening to Officer Tatum's show. We'll be back after the break. Officer Tatum Show, 844-900-7243. That's 844-900-7243. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I got Mike Gonzalez with me, the man of the hour, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and also the author of BLM, The Making of the New Marxist Revolution. Mike and I were discussing very vividly about BLM and the lies and the shortcomings of that movement, how it has destroyed Black America, and how what we can do to fix these things. And I want to talk to Mike in this segment. Obviously, he wrote the book. I want to talk about the book, and I want to talk about solutions. So welcome back, Mike Gonzalez. One of the questions that I have for you is, can you describe to the audience about the book that you wrote about BLM? Is it consistent with some of the things that you've said, or is there some more nuance to the book?
No, I remember driving in late 2020, the fall of 2020, and I had seen things very clearly on my drive home, and I saw what they were doing, the founders of Black Lives Matter, and I called my publisher and I said, "Look, I want to write a book on BLM. You know, you don't have to publish it. I'll find another publisher." And they said, "No, it sounds just about right. Let's have a meeting in the morning." And we met the next morning, and I sat down right away and I started writing. And the book really writes itself, and all the information, Brandon, all the information is there. I'm a former journalist, by the way, I should tell you. I spent 11 years with the Wall Street Journal. I worked for Agence France-Presse all over the world. Oh, yeah, I spent 15 years in Asia and Latin and Europe. And I'm very upset that the media has done what it has done, that the media has gone out of its way to not report and hide the fact that Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Melina Abdullah and Opal Tometi have been trained by Marxist theoreticians who know how to indoctrinate, how to infiltrate society, how to indoctrinate, how to sow ideas to overthrow society from within. That Patrice Cullors says things like, "We're going to have." We're going to need complete transformation at all three levels of government if we want to change the fate of this country. That's a verbatim quote. But Alicia Garza says we have to work really hard to dismantle the organizing principle of society. These are the things they say. They understand power. Alicia, you should listen to Alicia Garza speak about power. Power is about who decides on the resources, who decides who gets what. She's very clear on this because she has been instructed by the best people in the business. By the way, they know what they're doing because they asked Patrice Cullors recently, "Well, what do you think of raising all those tens of millions of dollars in 2020? And she said, "Oh yeah, that was a lot of white guilt going around." They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, Mike, I agree with you 1,000%. These women, I remember seeing Patrice Cullors on an interview, and she vividly said this out of her mouth. I made a video about it where she said they wanted to get rid of the police department. The mission is to get rid of prisons. The mission is to eliminate accountability for people who are committing certain crimes.
The courts. They want to get rid of the courts.
The courts. That's right. It was the courts. They want to get rid of the courts, the prisons, and the police. How on planet Earth, Mike, are we going to have a society without courts, without the prisons, without prisons, and without the police?
Brandon, society, no society can can survive that. But that's part of the plan. Then it was decided to survive.
And you guys are listening to Mike Gonzalez. Y'all have to go and follow Mike Gonzalez. He's a fellow at the Heritage Foundation. I mean, his resume is out of control. I would be reading his resume the entire segment if I read all of the great things that he's been able to accomplish. The book, BLM, I have to get the book and I have to read it. And I'll tell the audience again, it was funny because I knew I had you on the show. The Forgotten Man, my producer, got you lined up and he gave me a resume. I said, man, this guy is very smart. I just so happened to be searching last minute to get some talking points for this debate that I had on Fox Soul. And it was the most incredible article I've ever read with all the facts and information. And then, lo and behold, when I looked up, I said, Mike Gonzalez wrote this article, man. So I'm very proud of the things that you've done. And I want you to spend, I don't know how much time I have left, but I want you to spend a little bit of time telling people a little bit more about yourself and how can they follow you? How can they follow the work that you've done? I mean, you've written more than just one book. Can you tell the people about a little bit more about yourself?
So BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution, is my book that I wrote last year. And then the year before, I wrote The Plot to Change America. This is kind of companion books. I write a lot about this. I have a couple of articles out this week. People can follow me on Twitter at Gundisalvus, GUNDISALVUS, is Gonzalez in Latin. And just look up Mike Gonzalez with a Z at the end and the Heritage Foundation. You can find me that way on the Heritage website. I love this country, Brandon, like I know you do, and I want to be able to save it. By the way, America is not perfect. I want to make this very clear to your listeners. I don't have rose-tinted glasses on. No place on earth is ever going to be perfect, and we need to improve America constantly. And the Civil Rights Act was a humongous step forward. We had legal racism until we decided that we cannot make policy according to race and ethnicity, and we cannot go back to that. And nor should we ever try central planning or communism or any form of Marxism in this country. It is a killer. It is lethal.
Yeah, Mike, I think the people, I hope they are listening. I hope they're listening to what you're saying. You look at any of these societies that we will never want to live in. You know, you talk about Venezuela. I mean, now, Venezuela, communist China, these places that people are fleeing, places in Africa, in South America, people are fleeing these places to come to the United States of America. Why? Because they have adopted the socialist Marxist theology that have caused them to be desolate, caused the government to have all the power and the people have no say. And then when the government is corrupt and they fall apart, the people suffer mightily. Millions upon millions of people have died in these communist, Marxist, totalitarian societies that we are trying to warn people about. America does not need to go down this path in order to have what we would consider to be equality in our country. And Mike, I'm going to give you the last word. What is your take on that? You know, I know that you love this country. I got 1 minute left. I'll give you the last word to say what you feel on that subject.
Let's not forget that East Germany had to build a wall to keep its citizens in, that the Iron Curtain countries had to have an Iron Curtain. The border between Hungary and Austria would have to be guarded so people could not cross it, because people would be constantly crossing it. For heaven's sakes, let's not make this mistake. We all believe, you and I, and all of us believe, that Black Lives Matter. It's the organizations and the founders of the organizations who don't believe that. What they believe in is central planning. They want to get rid of capitalism, which is what builds the ladder to success. That's the reason I wrote my book, BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution. And I thank you enormously for giving me the opportunity to come and speak to you on the show.
God bless you, Mike Gonzalez. You got to come back. Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to Mike Gonzalez, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, the author of the book, BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution. Listen to the Officer Tatum Show. Catch me after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have a special guest with me, a young lady that went to the University of Arizona with me. So if you got some University of Arizona haters out there, y'all can just jump off the call right now, especially if you went to ASU. No, I'm just kidding. But my guess is, you know, standing up for women in sport, standing up for the female swimmers. She was a prolific swimmer at the University of Arizona, and me and her talked offline before about the initiatives that she's participating in to just give women a voice. You know, I want people to understand this. Women are not just going to sit back and be quiet about Leah Thomas and all these other lunatics, in my opinion. This is my words. These lunatics that are getting into the sport and they're being selfish about their injection into female sports and dominating female sports with no care in the world. So you guys help me welcome Marcy Smith to the show.
Hi, Brandon.
Marcy, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so proud of you. You've done so many great things. I know what you have done, but I want you to let the people know who are listening the strides that you have been able to make in leading the charge of showing or bringing awareness to what's going on with these individuals who are transgenders in female sports.
Brandon, thank you so much for having me on. It's really an honor. I really feel like you're a brother. I mean, as you know, at the University of Arizona, when you're an athlete there, it's even different than other colleges and universities, because we're totally part of this athletic family. And even though you were football and I was swimming, you know, we pass each other in the halls every day. I was lifting weights in the weight room with football players and across all sports. So I immediately feel a connection, and I have like such a sense of loyalty to the University of Arizona, which is hard for me at this point because this loyalty is, it's difficult to understand the NCAA in general and each individual school, because, you know, they're allowing what is happening right now. And I, as well as 45 of our alumni women from the University of Arizona, have taken a stand. We wrote 69 days ago, we sent a letter to the NCAA Board of Governors in protest of the policies that allowed Leah Thomas to compete at this year's NCAA championship meet. We just wanted to be a voice that we weren't hearing in terms of, you know, the travesty of allowing women to take a back seat to one swimmer who wanted to essentially hide behind the word inclusion at the detriment of every other woman at that meet. And so we wanted to be a voice, and actually I titled the letter, "Do We Have a Voice to the NCAA?" Because at this point, 69 days later, we have not had a response at all. We have 46 swimmers, including NCAA Women of the Year, multiple NCAA champions, Olympic gold medalists, Olympic silver medalists. Virtually everyone on the list has scored in the top 8 to 16 at that meet. And including myself, I was a 100 backstroke champion in 2005. And so I know what it feels like to stand on that podium. And it truly has been one of the best days of my life. And it has projected beyond swimming. It has taken me through, you know, job interviews and helped me to land the career that I have. And I've been very successful in business as well because of the lessons and confidence earned through athletics. And it's just been such a disappointment because there is nobody willing to speak to us, even speak to us, to be in the discussion. And that's just unacceptable, in my opinion, that women athletes did not have a seat at the table in this decision-making process, and we continue to be silenced and ignored. And that is just, it's something I don't recognize today.
Well, Marcy, you know, the funny thing is people probably don't recognize this or know this, but this is not a partisan thing. This is not just conservative athletes. These are athletes from both sides of the spectrum, may or may not even agree on politics, but it's a combination of women from the University of Arizona and many other women who I know would adopt the principle that are saying, listen, we need to have a voice in this. Let us have say in whether or not we believe a biological man should be able to compete against women. I want to hear your take on it. I don't want you to have to be too controversial here, but I want your take on what does it mean to have a man, a person who's biologically a man, for essential biological purposes, that person is a man. Now, I know that they take hormones and they lose some strength here and there, but what does it mean to have a man compete in a female sport, and what does it do to women who are working hard every day to lose to someone like that?
I can tell you that it literally took everything in me every day training for my entire junior season. And obviously the trajectory started in childhood, right? So it's years and years and years of training. And in swimming in particular, the grind of what it takes, we're training 20 hours a week, swimming, running, lifting weights, stretching, ab workouts, dry land circuits, yoga. I mean, we train so many hours, and it's all worth it. Let me tell you, it's all worth it. But I have envisioned myself in the position that these girls had to be in this year, where you do that every day, and then you show up at a meet, and you just know you're standing next to a 6'4", male-bodied athlete who was on the men's team, you know, just a few months prior, and there just has to be this sense of inferiority before you even get on the block, because to compare yourself and to have to be in the position where you compare yourself to a male-bodied person is it's very defeating, and it's just one of the reasons why we had to stand up. I mean, in 2005, I won the 100 backstroke on the women's side. Matt Grievers, who is a dear friend of mine now, won on the men's side that same year. He is a 6'8" Goliath of a man. I am also above average height for women. I'm 5'10". But the difference in our time was 7 seconds. And yet, we could be photographed together. We were in the same paragraph in the newspaper together. Why? Because we were seen as equals. I was a champion on the women's side. He was a champion on the men's side. And that is the only way that I could be judged as equal to him. Now, if you put me in a competition head-to-head with him after 12 months of testosterone suppression, am I going to be equal to him? Absolutely not. He beat me by half a pool length. So even if he cut that in half, it would still be a quarter of a pool length. So the only way for women to really gain true equality against men is to be judged in our own sex categories. And that is why men's and women's athletics has been separated for so many decades with no question, because
Marcy,
way,
I think I got about 1 minute left. How can people support you? Just give us that real quick in 1 minute. How can people support you? If you need a little more time, we can roll it over.
Sure. We are coordinating a conference in Las Vegas that is going to be at the same time the NCAA athletic directors are meeting in Las Vegas on June 26th to 28th. We are asking public, whoever wants to come and participate, as a chance for women's groups to come together to discuss and debate. We're bringing some of the leading scientists on the subject studying these sports differences, as well as politically connected groups and legal panels to discuss all the issues surrounding this. And so we want to invite everybody to iconswomen.com, And please come and participate. Join us if you can't. Support us in any way you can.
Thank you, Marshy. Y'all better go join. See you after the break.
Officer Tatum Show, 844-900-7243. That's 844-900-7243.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Gentlemen and ladies, I have a caller calling in. I want to get him in before I run into my rant again. Chris from Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the Officer Tatum Show.
Hey, how are you doing there, my friend?
I'm doing well. I'm blessed. How about you?
I'm good, thank you. Hey, listen, officer, as a legal firearm owner on the outskirts of Chicago here, you know, I had to go through the process of getting a FOID card and whatnot. And, you know, we take my son to the shooting range. My wife does it as well. And, you know, we had to go through classes to be able to come, you know, to be able to learn how to use firearms correctly. My question is, with the young man in, you know, in Texas that went and did this massacre, how do you feel about having a screening process before they're 18 years old and maybe making these young people be able to go through a screening process as adults to be able to, you know, get the firearm? I just feel like, you know, maybe they're not ready at 18. Maybe they'd be ready more at, say, 20, 21 and take the proper training. I mean, I just feel like maybe the gentleman that sold him these firearms and the tactical gear, wasn't there any red flags as him as the seller saying, hey, you know, this might not be right. You know what I mean?
Chris, I agree with you 1,000%. It's very interesting. I'm always open to nuance, right? I mean, I lean more towards not touching the constitutional right to keep and bear arms, because I do know that some 18-year-olds are going out hunting. But however, my son, right. You know, he's 11. He comes out with me. I teach him how to shoot. And but you bring up an incredible point, because
my son's 15 and we do the same thing. You know, we grew up in Southeast Ohio and we were out hunting and stuff. But I just look at some of the, you know, the determining factors that we have nowadays, that maybe some of these young fellows are not mentally capable of where they need to be, or they don't have the proper, you know, father figure and or male role model, or woman role model for that matter, teaching them how to use things correctly.
I agree, Chris. You know, I would normally be against any gun legislation, but I'm not totally against them having a little more qualifications for 18-year-olds. You know, maybe if you were 18 years old and you've been through a special academy that you graduated from, you know, like a ROTC program or something like that, or if you're 18 years old and you join the military, you know, maybe there are special ramifications for the AR-15s. You know, maybe you can buy a hunting rifle. You can buy a hunting rifle, a single shot rifle at 18, but when it comes to AR-15s, you know, maybe there does need to be a little more qualification. So, Chris, thank you for the call, and I agree with you. And I'm open to it, ladies and gentlemen. I know I'm a gun nut, but at the same time, I'm willing to sit down and have that conversation. I think the people that we elect into the office should be sitting there having a realistic conversation about these things. You know, why would you sell a kid like that a gun? I mean, this is time where you can be discriminatory against individuals that come in your store and look like they're crazy. And stores have the right to refuse selling guns to certain people. I've seen it happen multiple times. There's people that come into the store and they know nothing about a gun, and they come in and it appears that they don't have any good intentions. As a gun store, you can say, you know what, I'm not selling you the gun. You better go next door, because I'm not selling you a gun. You know, I'm making a discretionary decision to say, you know, I'm not selling. I don't feel comfortable selling you the gun. Now, you may run into a Civil Rights Act if you do that to a black person. But anybody else in the world, if you feel uncomfortable, I think you should use your discretion. I mean, this kid was a nuts. He looked nuts. He was crazy. He was mumbling to himself like he was a cold-blooded killer. If he came into the store, I mean, you couldn't look in his eyes and say, oh, man, you know what? Let me do a background check. You hold a background check in the back and don't give it to him, and say, hey, man, you know, it looks like it's taking longer than usual. Let me, you know, hit us back in another day. Come back tomorrow. We can see if we can see what we can do. There's a delay in the system. The system isn't working. The system is down. I mean, you can make any excuse in the world. in order to sell his kid the gun that ended up costing the lives of many people in the community. So, Chris, thank you so much for that call. Let me see. Is it Chuck from Indiana?
Yes. Hello. Hi, Chuck from Indiana.
Hey, welcome to the Officer Tatum Show.
Hey, Officer Tatum. Great to talk to you. I just wanted to chime in. I've done a lot of instruction, police work, 30-year veteran up here in northern Indiana. And one of the keys here is going to be, you know, what those officers on scene were told. As you know, having been in law enforcement, they will do what they're told. I'm sure they wanted to go in. I'm sure they wanted to follow any training protocols that they had. But obviously there was a breakdown in that chain. There had to be. And what people a lot of times understand is the one thing that police officers will do is what they're told by their chain of command. So I think that's really the area that needs to be investigated to get to the bottom of it and try to prevent any failures in the future, so to speak.
Thank you, Chuck, for such an insightful call. I love that you're, you know, that Chuck is even-minded. I mean, people are so vitriolic nowadays that they can't think for themselves. They can't think of nothing but throwing these officers under the bus. I mean, the reason why I'm so critical of people making comments on this Uvalde thing, especially people who have never done law enforcement, is that there's so many nuances to this. And we have no idea. There's so many circumstances that could have led this chief to making the right decision at the time with the information that he had. And there's circumstances that could have made him a nut job and he deserved to go to jail for what he did. It can literally tip either way, depending on the content of the information that is presented. Do I need to do the prison again? So this is, you know, it could have gone either way. And I'm just going to let the audience know, and Chuck, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but there could be a possibility, and I'm hearing rumors coming out that the chief, with the miscommunication that was going on at the scene, the chief believed that there weren't kids alive or kids in the room or something of that nature. If the kids were, it doesn't matter if they were alive or not. If the kids were in the room and the guy already had the propensity of shooting people, he's still an active shooter threat. But if the chief got information back that nobody's in the room, maybe all the kids have escaped out of the room. They don't see any evidence of somebody in the room or life in the room, that he may have barricaded himself in an isolated area. I could see why he have made a decision that we now know was a wrong decision. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Officer Tatum Show. You want to call in? Call in number 844-900-7243. I'll be back after the break.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.